Nadine did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northwest as you listen. This is their story. In Salford, one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, healthcare training programs turn away qualified applicants while hospital wards operate understaffed. The simulation labs sit empty, the people who want to train as nurses wait at home, and someone in Whitehall says there is no money to connect them. Here is how that works and why it is not about money at all.
I grew up in Little Holton, watching my mum come home from her shifts at Salford Royal, exhausted but proud of what she did as a healthcare assistant. She would tell me stories about the patients, how she helped them through their worst moments, made them laugh when they needed it most. I wanted that. I wanted to be the person who could do more than comfort, who could administer medications, make clinical decisions, be a registered nurse. But life had other plans first. When I was 16, my dad was made redundant from the docks. One day, he was loading containers. The next day, the company said his entire shift was no longer needed. Mum's wages could not cover everything, so I left school and got a job at Next in the Lowry outlet. I told myself it was temporary, just until things got better. Years passed. I worked my way up to assistant manager, then manager, learned how to handle stock, staff rotas, difficult customers. I was good at it, but every time I walked past Salford Royal, I felt this pull, this sense that I was meant to be inside those walls, not arranging clothes on rails. By 26, I had finally saved enough to support myself through training. My references from retail were excellent. I had leadership experience, customer service skills that would transfer perfectly to patient care. University of Salford accepted me for adult nursing starting September 2021. I handed in my notice at work, told everyone I was finally doing it, following in my mum's footsteps but taking it further. 2 weeks before term started, my phone rang. I am so sorry, the admissions tutor said. Your funded place has been withdrawn. Health Education England has informed us that their budget allocation has been reduced and we cannot proceed with the full cohort. I asked what that meant. She explained that while they had accepted me and wanted me on the course, the funding stream from the government had been capped. There is no funding, she said. Our hands are tied. It sounded reasonable. Budgets get cut. Organisations have to make difficult choices. I was disappointed, but I understood. I got my job back at Next and tried again the following year. Same story in 2022. This time, the admissions tutor was more direct. We have 40 excellent applicants for 25 places on the course, but HM Treasury has set spending limits that mean we can only fund 12 students. It is not about your qualifications or our capacity to train you. The money simply is not there. I started volunteering at Salford Royal to stay connected, helping where I could on the wards. That is where I met Ava, who had travelled over from Manchester Withington. She had the same story, qualified, accepted, turned away, because the funding allocation had been slashed. We were not isolated cases. This was happening across the Northwest. One afternoon, I was helping move equipment and noticed the nursing simulation labs on the third floor. State-of-the-art mannequins, hospital beds, monitors, everything you would need to learn clinical skills. The coordinator, Sarah, was locking up. I asked if they were busy. We use them Mondays and Tuesdays, she said. The rest of the week, they sit empty. We had to turn away 15 qualified applicants last year, not because we did not have space or capacity to train them, but because NHS England said the funding was not available. I stood there, looking at the empty labs, thinking about Ava, about the 28 other people who had been turned away from my cohort alone. The rooms existed, the equipment existed, the tutors existed, the The people who wanted to train existed. The hospitals that needed us existed. What exactly was it that there was no money for? Applied for the third time in 2023. By now, I knew what to expect, but I had to try. The same admissions tutor called me personally. Nadine, you are an excellent candidate and we would love to have you. The Treasury spending limits mean we simply cannot access the funding that exists in principle. I wish I could give you a different answer. That phrase stayed with me. Funding that exists in principle. What did that mean? Either the money existed or it did not. Either the government could afford to train nurses or it could not. But I was starting to see the contradiction everywhere. Empty training labs, understaffed wards, people like me and Ava ready to work, buildings designed for education, sitting idle 3 days a week. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But I could see with my own eyes that the real resources existed. The people, the buildings, the equipment, the staff who could teach us. The Treasury spending limit was not about scarcity. It was about choice. The government that issues the pound chose not to spend the pounds that would connect the people to the training, to the hospitals that needed them. That is a political decision dressed as an accounting problem. When they said, there is no funding, what they meant was, we have decided not to fund this. Those are not the same thing. I am still here, still watching, still applying. What I understand now is that this was never about whether Britain could afford to train more nurses. It was about whether the people making decisions believed that we deserved to be trained. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. And it is the same choice being made in every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Nadine experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound, a standard never applied to other areas of spending. Think of the tobacco industry in the 1960s, demanding absolute proof that smoking caused cancer before accepting any regulation. They demanded an impossible standard of evidence, requiring decades of perfect data while people died. Every study was dismissed as insufficient, every correlation questioned, every expert challenged. The bar for proof was set so high that action became impossible. In Nadine's story, the same logic operates. The Treasury demands perfect efficiency, zero training dropouts, guaranteed employment outcomes before approving nursing places. They want certainty about every student's future career path, precise calculations of return on investment, absolute assurance that no public money will ever be wasted. Meanwhile, wards operate understaffed and simulation labs sit empty. But watch what happens when the government wants to cut corporate tax rates or bail out failing banks. Suddenly, the demand for perfect outcomes disappears. No guarantee of job creation is required for tax cuts. No promise of responsible lending is demanded before bank rescues. The impossible standard applies only when the government is asked to invest in people and public services. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. In Salford, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Salford ranks 73 out of 543 English constituencies on the deprivation index, placing it in the second most deprived decile. 929 charities are registered in the constituency. The area received £18.6 million in grants, tracked by 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics produced by Blocked Britain.